You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again for joining me this week. I want to give you an update on the Facebook saga. If you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, you'll know that I got hacked really bad. Someone is trying to shut down the Voice of American Law Enforcement, and they were very effective in that they bypassed Facebook security. They got hold of my personal page and sent out all kinds of weird posts, and then Facebook shut it down for objectionable content. But they not only did that, but they went to my fan page. Now, this was my page that I had 27, almost 28,000 pretty loyal followers. They changed the name of the page. I don't know how the hell they did it. They got through their security. They changed the name. They put up all kinds of weird posts. They talked to people on my page pretending to be me. I don't have any idea what they said, but I can sure as hell think that it wasn't anything good. And then they took control of the page entirely and had me removed as an admin. I have been working with Facebook. Well, let me put it this way. I've been trying to work with Facebook to get these pages back. Finally, last week, I got my personal page back that has 5,000 friends. I still do not have control of my regular fan page, but I have created a new page. If you go to the Voice of American Law Enforcement on Facebook, you'll see my new Facebook page. So the Voice of American Law Enforcement and my new personal page is LT Randy, one word, Sutton. LT Randy Sutton, and that's my new personal page because my old page has the maximum amount of friends on there as I can have. So go to Facebook, continue to follow me, and I will continue to get my page back. No one will silence the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Lots happening in law enforcement. Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. It seems like every other show or so, I bring up certain specific cities that are constantly having something to do negatively with law enforcement. And this week again, it's the same thing. My old pal, Ted Wheeler, the mayor of Portland, I swear this guy single-handedly wants to dismantle law enforcement in Portland. Okay, so a little bit of background about this guy. He is the mayor, and he appointed himself police commissioner. So this way he could control the police department. And then what did he do? He hires a chief of police for the Portland Police Bureau, who is, in essence, will do whatever the mayor wants to do. She has proven herself to be exceedingly ineffective when it comes down to actually making decisions that portend to be of any leadership quality at all for the men and women. So, once again, he's in the news. What does he want to do this time? He wants to start a pilot program, and so he wants to bring unarmed cops to Portland. That's right. The idea is that he wants to defund the mounted police unit, thereby taking cops off of the street that were there doing enforcement stuff. Now, remember, the mounted unit is very effective for crowd control. Now, what's been one of the major issues in Portland? Antifa and their attacks and Portland's pathetic police response at the behest of the mayor and the chief for basically hands-off and allowing Antifa to do whatever the hell they want to do. Well, one of the things about mounted units is they are great for crowd control. Now, what is this mayor doing? He wants to defund the mounted unit and take that money and hire a bunch of unarmed cops. They're calling them, they're basically community service officers. And quite honestly, there are police departments that effectively use people in civilian capacities to take reports and not have any suspect contact. They're basically report takers, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I do not trust Wheeler because I've seen him in action. I know that he is very, very anti-law enforcement, and he has been. He's been changing the department radically from being a proactive police department to being a reactive police department. And so what he's doing here is I think, underhanded. I think what he's really got in mind is to make the police department as unicorn and rainbow friendly as possible, thereby trying to bring in unarmed police officers to do duties that probably should be handled by real cops. One of the things that he says he wants to use them for is certain types of disturbances. Well, I got news for you. Anytime that you have contact as a law enforcement official, these things can go bad in a heartbeat. So what he's really doing is gambling with people's lives. And this is coming up for a vote to the city council. They call them public safety support specialists. But my take on this is just another way to undermine the actual police officers of the Portland Police Bureau. I will definitely be keeping an eye on this because you know that I am always watching Portland. Now, talk about Snowflakeville. I mean, I don't think anything competes with Portland for the city of snowflakes, but this news story out of Michigan will just make you sit there and wonder, how is this possible? Now, we all know that institutions of learning, high schools, grammar schools, colleges, are all concerned with active shooters, as they should be. We have seen, of course, a terrible loss of life and tragic situations taking place at these high schools and colleges. So a college in Michigan, it's Oakland University, and they proudly are a gun-free zone. They make sure that everybody knows that they are a, quote, gun-free zone. But they also are trying to deal with the realities of active shooters. So they had a meeting. The faculty had a meeting. And included in this faculty was the president of the American Association of University Professors. And his name is Tom DeSena. And here's the headline. Michigan College arms staff with hockey pucks to fight active shooters. I didn't stutter. I didn't misread that. Michigan College arms staff with hockey pucks to fight active shooters. And this is almost mind-boggling. It started off with an offhand comment by a chief of police who was giving a talk about active shooters. And that's what a chief is supposed to be doing, right? So he's talking to the professors, and they're discussing the threats and what to do about it. And he makes an offhand comment about, I guess someone brought up throwing rocks at active shooters. Another brilliant concept. And he made mention that he had been hit in the head with a hockey puck and how much it hurt. Well, the university professors just seized on that and loved this idea. And this is a quote from the president of the American Association of University Professors. Quote, "We thought, yeah, that's something we can do. we can make these available at least to our members and a fair number of students as well. They want to bring a hockey puck to a gunfight. It would be laughable if it weren't reality. If this were on Saturday Night Live or some satirical comedy show, we would sit there and chuckle and move on to the next. But these people are serious. They actually want to give their faculty hockey pucks in order to protect the campus. These are the people who are educating the future leaders of America. And the students, they are the ones that are going to be, that are taught and lectured to by folks that are so out of touch with any sense of reality that they are willing to consider. In fact, they're not only considering it, they already bought $2,500 worth of hockey pucks to distribute. So, you know, when the chief of police, when he was told that they actually took his suggestion and ran with it, he said, quote, it was not a well thought out strategy. It was a spur of the moment thing that I thought had merit to it, and it kind of caught on. So I don't know if this guy actually thinks that this is a strategy that's worthwhile. It doesn't sound like it, but it's now reality. They're bringing hockey pucks to a gunfight, and you know, here's the funny part. Now I'm going to make a forecast here. Should, God forbid, an active shooter actually attack this campus, and faculty members or students actually engage the shooter by throwing hockey pucks at him, and they get themselves killed, who are they going to sue? Are they going to sue the university for this ridiculous concept? Probably not. They're probably going to sue the chief of police for suggesting it, and therefore that he offered that as a strategy. That's just a forecast, and let's hope that this never has to even take place, because this one is a beauty. Okay, Snowflakeville. There was a recent change in the governorship of New Jersey. Everybody knew Chris Christie is no longer in office, and the new governor is on a par with the governor of New York and California in his liberalism. And now, as a result, there was just a decision made by the governor and the attorney general in New Jersey, and it is state bars cops from assisting ICE. So here's what happened. I saw a video put out by the colonel of the New Jersey State Police, basically telling people that the new laws in New Jersey are that the police throughout the state are not going to assist ICE in any way. Now, look, ICE performs a very, very necessary job when it comes down to protecting our nation. I understand that police agencies, and I agree with the fact that police officers are not immigration cops. They shouldn't be rounding up illegal aliens, and they don't. They haven't. They haven't for, I don't even know if regular police departments ever did that. I know during my career we didn't. That was the job of the federal government. But you always assisted other law enforcement agencies, and especially when you consider that the U.S. government mostly wants to do is to deport criminal aliens. So what has happened in the past is very simple. When an individual who is an undocumented alien commits a crime and they are incarcerated, ICE will file a detainer to that facility saying, give us 48 hours notice before you're going to release this guy, so we'll come and take custody of him. And as a result, they have gotten rid of all kinds of criminal aliens. Well, now what the New Jersey Attorney General and Governor are saying that they're not going to assist ICE at all with anything. This is a very, very dangerous precedent. We're seeing more and more of this, the sanctuary cities, the sanctuary states. And this is a very misguided and dangerous situation. There are people who are committing very, very violent crimes in this country. And by not allowing ICE to do its job, what these policies are in effect doing is keeping criminals in the community. Why would you want to do that? What kind of weird psyche says that this is the right thing to do? The government's job is to protect its people from crime. And if you know that you have an individual who is a violent offender, why the hell would you want to keep him in the community just so you can thumb your nose at the federal government, at President Trump, at ICE? It is absolutely insane. And to force the New Jersey State Police commander to come out and do a video basically surrendering to this political agenda is demeaning to the law enforcement as a whole, to the New Jersey State Police, which is a proud organization, and it is dangerous to the community. This is another politically driven, anti-citizen, anti-law enforcement maneuver, and people will pay a steep price for it. One good story that I want to tell you about. Now, if you've listened to my broadcast or seen me on Facebook or read what I write about this situation, the NFL players who continue to kneel or have kneeled during the anthem to protest racism and police brutality, I've been very outspoken about that. Well, I was very pleased to see an NFL player, one of the guys who did kneel with the Broncos, a guy named Von Miller. He helped to raise $200,000 to buy body armor for police. He and a bunch of other NFL players and and some administrators of the Broncos actually put together $200,000 to protect law enforcement officers. Now, I don't agree with kneeling, but just as I have to be fair to all when it comes down to my opinions and the way I view things, I think this is an amazing act of compassion and kindness, and showed that these individuals on this Broncos team really do care about their cops. And that, to me, is worth a big shout-out. And that's what I have to tell you from my view from the blue today. And we have a great guest waiting for us in the interview room. To my active duty law enforcement officers, almost everybody that is working a patrol job likes or needs to do off-duty work. Some people call them road assignments. Some people call them off-duty assignments, but in essence, they're construction jobs, they're security details at concerts, crowd control, workplace. There's all kinds of need out there. Now, most of the police departments, they allow you to do that. And what you might not know is that besides going through your own agency, there is an organization that does nothing but book off-duty cops for events. And they do it with the approval of your agency. They're in almost all states in this nation. So go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And also, if you're looking to hire an off-duty police officer for a security job, construction job, anything of that nature where you want an armed police officer, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's 888-572-2442. And they are incredibly professional. They care about their officers, and almost everybody needs to make extra money. So check it out, offdutypoliceofficers.com. For my active duty law enforcement officers, and probably some military as well, if you wear body armor, you want to arrest the odor. Yes, you want to arrest the odor because we know how nasty it can get. Stinkyvest.com. That is where you get Arrest My Vest Spray. It's military police grade odor eliminating spray. This is amazing stuff. And you don't actually have to use it just for your vest, although it's made specifically for that. It is all natural. It has no harsh chemicals, but it's good for basically any odor eliminating at all. It's safe on your Kevlar. It is really amazing stuff. And you know how uncomfortable it can get, how hot those vests are. So check it out, stinkyvest.com. And it is the technology of odor-absorbing molecules that makes this such an amazing product. Check it out, stinkyvest.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, and with me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement is a very special guest, Karen Solomon. Karen has been a guest on this program before because the work that she's doing is incredibly important. She's been giving a voice to the thousands of officers in the field who can't work or speak out. She's interviewed hundreds of law enforcement officers and their families to gain insight into the field of trauma, stress, physical and emotional survival. She is a national speaker, author, columnist, and advocate. Her books, Harpony Badge and The Price They Pay, are used in citizens' academies throughout the country and endorsed by law enforcement leadership. And Karen is also the creator of Blue Help. Karen, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you.
You know, the work that you do is vitally important, and it's but it's a very difficult topic to talk about. Tell me a little bit and let the audience know a little bit about who you are and your background in why you created and have worked so tirelessly to assist law enforcement officers who are facing trauma.
Sure. So my husband's been a law enforcement officer for 22 years in Massachusetts. I have two nephews that are going into law enforcement. I have not lost an officer to suicide, but I just felt after doing some research and writing my books and talking to officers that there was a gap where it comes to supporting the officers who are suicidal and supporting the officers after a suicide. So for the last 4 years, I've basically been talking to officers, their families, gathering stories, writing their stories, and finding out about the trauma that the career often brings to the officers and their family. And we do know that not all the officers kill themselves as a direct result of their job. We do know that some of them absolutely do, but the job factors in, and it's just an added stress that the typical person on the street doesn't have. So far this year, we've had 140 suicides. Last year we had 159, and the year before we had 140. And these are rolling numbers.
Before you go on, let's look at those numbers and delve into them for just a moment. These are the absolute clear cut suicides that you're talking about. Where there's no doubt about the method of the death. But don't you believe that the number is much higher?
I do believe. I don't know how much higher. So that's a problem because. So, for instance, when we started 2018, we had verified 138 suicides for 2017. Since, throughout the year, that number went from 138 to 159 because as more people find out about us, more people report the suicides, so we get them. We know that there are still some that are not reported, but we just don't know what that looks like. And these officers, that 159 for last year does include 9 retired officers that have retired from the job, and we do track how far removed they are from the job. Has it been a year, 2 years, 3 years? So, for instance, in 2018, there's 140 suicides. 9 of those are retired within 2 years of the job. So we track that to see also, how many retirees. So obviously the retiree number is way off base because people lose track of them. They don't report it. It's just people who know somebody or remember somebody from the job and know they killed themselves, they report it. So the accuracy of these numbers, it's as accurate as it's going to get because we don't, it's not a guess, it's not an estimate, it's not an assumption or something that we believe to be happening. It's something that we know their name, we know their age, their state, their how many kids they have, we know how many years they've served on the job, what their role was, so what their, we pretty much know if they were a vet. We collect 25 data points, so we know who these guys are and these ladies are. So it's definitely a hard and fast number and data.
Gotcha. Okay. So you have created an organization to assist law enforcement, Blue Help. Talk about that for a moment.
So Blue Help is an organization. Help is an acronym: Honor, Educate, Lead, and Prevent. And what we do is we honor the lives of the officers who kill themselves. So if they give us permission or when they give us permission, we put their faces on our page, similar to what Officer Dan Memorial does. But it's a very tricky because of the stigma. You'll see that we have very few faces on our page. But we do have contact with the family. So typically when a suicide is submitted to us, we contact the family if they give us permission. So if the family submits the form, there's a checkbox that says, can we contact you for further information? If they say yes, we contact them, we get the backstory. So we understand what's been going on with the officer. Sometimes the chiefs or the departments report it. We have been sending care packages out to the families as they die so that they get a condolence card, they get a package to let them know that they're not alone. If they need anything, they contact us. We match them up with other families if they want help just getting through. We also do prevention conferences and training throughout the country. We just did the IACP. We'll be at Axon Accelerate next year. We also just do whatever we can do, whatever is asked of us to help people. We're kind of a clearinghouse, if you look at it like that, where we people will come to us and they say, hey, can you help us set up a peer support group? No, we can't, but we know who can help you. So we'll say, here, why don't you contact this person? Or they'll ask us for training and we'll help them find that training. So we're not necessarily a one-stop shop. We are kind of like a database and, like I said, a clearinghouse of information. In addition to that, we are kind of trying to liken ourselves after the COPS organization for line of duty deaths. Next year, we will be rolling out grief camps for the children. And that is something that they do for line of duty deaths that they don't do for suicide. So we're going to be doing that. We are also hosting a dinner at Police Week, and that will be the first ever dinner that honors the service of the officers who died by suicide and those who have been permanently disabled. That's not something that's ever been done. Police Week is traditionally reserved for line of duty deaths, but we feel like it's not how they died that mattered. It's definitely how they lived. So we are going to honor those families. We're going to be bringing them to Police Week, selling tickets for the dinner, and basically just thanking them for everything they've done and let them know that we haven't forgotten about them.
You know, I think that that is such, not only is it a noble cause and one that is been ignored for far, far too long, but it's also a courageous cause in that you're taking on a subject that is very difficult for many people to talk about, especially in law enforcement agencies. I remember during my career as a police officer with Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, for the last 15 years of my career, I was assistant commander of the Honor Guard. And every time a line of duty death happened, there was no question about the honors that we were going to give those men and women. But when it came down to a suicide, each time there was discussion at the top levels of the agency and even within the Honor Guard itself as to what kind of honors do we give to a police officer who takes his own life. And there were some very spirited discussions that took place as a result of that. So you're taking on a topic that is very, very controversial, if you will, even within the law enforcement community.
Yeah, we definitely are, and it's funny because we know it's controversial, and I mean, I think it shows in a number of ways. People are afraid to offer us financial and support and other support because they're afraid they're going to offend somebody or offend the line of duty family. So we don't, you know, it was funny because I thought everybody would jump on board and it would be great and we would have plenty of money for the families and do all this stuff, but in reality, we don't, because a lot of people don't want to touch us, and that's kind of a funny thing, because if you really do honor a person's life, you honor them, not this moment in time where they killed themselves. So we also have, you know, and I've talked about this before, you know, an officer, their kids get walked to the first day of school, they go to take them to the proms. Suicide, there's nobody to be found. We did find a department in Connecticut, which was amazing. Six officers from the department showed up at the daughter's high school graduation, and her father had killed himself 2 years ago. And it was fantastic because it's not something that's traditionally done. And it goes to that whole stigma, and it goes to that whole confusion of what do we do? How do we handle this? We saw that instance this year of the officer in Texas where the chief didn't want to give him a funeral with honors. So all of that stuff gets left behind. Yet if somebody dies of a heart attack, we give it our all. If somebody's got leukemia, give it our all. Get cancer, hey, let's go, you know. But the suicide thing, it's a mental issue, just the same as cancer or a heart attack is a physical issue, and it's not necessarily controllable. So why are we drawing this line? Why are we saying, hey, this guy served us for 20 years. He was cop of the year. He was an FTO. He was this, he was that. But now he's nothing to us because he killed himself. I don't understand that. And we do tackle it. You know, we've tackled it head on by sharing the family stories. We don't share any name, no matter how public the suicide, we will not share it unless the family says it's okay, because we know the stigma, we know the issues surrounding it. But when they do let us, we do tackle it head on, and we do, like I said, with this dinner, with these grief camps, with putting their faces on our page, we're going at it the way we would with any other death. You know
for my listeners who are unfamiliar with some of your references, COPS is an organization called Concerns of Police Survivors. They've been in action since the early 80s, and they deal with line-of-duty deaths and provide amazing peer support for those families. But the reality is that mental health and post-traumatic stress injury and post-traumatic stress disorder is just beginning to be understood in relation to the law enforcement community. It's been recognized in the military, of course, for years, but we're just beginning as a profession to start accepting and understanding that this is a reality, and right. and yet there's this strong correlation to suicides as well.
And you were, I know you were at the COPS conference. We couldn't make it this year, but they are, you know, they are recognizing it, and they have that annual wellness conference, but they're not recognizing the death. They're not recognizing the families. And so there's a distinct difference between supporting the officers and the families in their time of need and promoting wellness. I really feel that if we're promoting wellness, it should carry over to the families when they need them. We shouldn't turn them away when they need help, because God forbid anything happens to anybody in my family, I would have nowhere to turn as an officer. Obviously, now there's my organization, but there's nowhere for them to go. They lose their benefits. They don't have fundraisers. They don't have grief camps. If they do call established organizations, established organizations will say, I am sorry, we cannot help you, it was a suicide. So there's not a lot of, it's starting to pick up steam, but it's not fast enough for the 140 officers that lost an officer this year, for the 9-year-old who found his dad 2 weeks ago. You know, so where are they going? They have nowhere to go. They have nobody to support them. And that's a shame, and we should all be ashamed of ourselves that we say we can't help you anymore because your husband killed yourself. Well, that family suffers just as much as any other family, if arguably not more so, because of the type of death, because they'll never have answers. They'll never have closure. So who are we to decide who gets to be honored and who doesn't? You know, why did we become judge and jury over a person's method of death? That doesn't make any sense to me.
When you're talking about, this is a societal issue as well. I mean, suicide.
Agreed.
Nationally is almost at epidemic proportions, but just as you said, it is still such a stigma attached to it. But the reality is that the families are suffering nonetheless, and it's those who we should be caring for.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There was a case in New Jersey where an officer died in the line of duty. He'd been on the job for 6 years, and he died in a car accident while on duty, and he was engaged, and he had two children, and they changed the law in New Jersey so that his fiance and their children would get benefits the same as somebody who's married in the line of death. And what they said was it would be a travesty for that family to suffer because of the poor judgment of the family because they didn't get married. Yet New Jersey doesn't give those same benefits to a suicide, and more officers in New Jersey have killed themselves in line of duty over the past years. So why is it not a travesty for that family to suffer because of the judgment, not necessarily poor, but the judgment of the officer to take his life? So it's very contradictory. It's very frustrating when you get into it and you start learning about the different cases and the different families and their stories and, you know, the families that are losing their homes. There's a woman who her husband was on the job for 15 years. He killed himself on the job. She wanted benefits. They are taking her to court saying, you don't deserve the benefits because he killed himself because you had a bad marriage. That's crazy, especially when he had been shot at on the job right before his death. He had experienced some trauma right before his death. So now you're going to take the widow to court and say, you were a bad wife, his job was great. It just gets me so riled up because there's not a lot it almost feels hopeless sometimes. Because how much
I understand
can we do?
Exactly what you're saying.
Do?
I understand exactly what you're saying. And you know, until we start accepting post-traumatic stress injury and post-traumatic stress disorder as a reality in law enforcement, and you know as well as I do that in many states, post-traumatic stress is not even considered a line of duty injury. And not
right.
only that, but in many states and many police agencies, if a police officer goes and asks for help, they themselves might be victimized and terminated by their own agency simply for asking for help. So this is all part of a much bigger issue. Don't you agree?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And as you know, more states states are getting on board. Florida passed the legislation recently where post-traumatic stress is an injury. Massachusetts is a little behind. We are trying to pass a bill here that allows a mandatory 2-hour suicide prevention training a year, but what's 2 hours a year, you know, for suicide prevention? But it's not, you're right. Post-traumatic stress needs to be, at some point somebody decided a heart attack was a line-of-duty death, and whoever made that decision should figure out how they came to that decision and use that same logic on a suicide and say, okay, because, you know, a heart attack isn't 100% attributable to the job. So at some point somebody made a judgment call, and I think it's time somebody made a judgment call on suicide, especially when you have officers killing themselves in their cars. And some people will say, well, you know, if we give them benefits and more officers are going to kill themselves. No, they're not. You know, my husband's not going to walk out and, you know, kill himself just because I'm going to get benefits. That's absolutely not true. It's still going to happen. But I think that if we address it the way we do heart attacks and we try to prevent it more and we accept it, the numbers will actually go down, because then you're not going to want to pay out those benefits, right? You're going to be forced. I mean, there's all kinds of arguments for and against it. So I don't want to get into that, because I think no matter what I say, it could be, you know, taken out of context. But the bottom line is we need to spend more time on this. We need to spend more money. We need to spend more resources. And we absolutely need the leadership to get in front of this and really acknowledge it and make it acceptable to talk about it.
I think that's one of the keys is right there is, once again, leadership plays the most tremendous role when it comes down to how law enforcement officers are treated. And I hate to say this, but I know this to be a fact, and that is that that leadership often plays a role in officers' decisions to commit suicide. It is the way that police officers are being treated in many of the agencies around the country that exacerbates the problem and doesn't. They're not going after the problem in a positive way. They're actually creating stressful situations which lead to post-traumatic stress.
I agree. I agree. And there's a lot of stories I could tell you about that, but I'm not at liberty to. But there are definitely instances where the environment, the way they were treated for their behavior, the way they were treated for perceived behavior, that has contributed. And, you know, some officers, they're ashamed. They don't want to lose their jobs, and something happens, so they, in this, you know, heat of the moment, they kill themselves because somehow they think that that's better for their family or better for themselves or whatever the reason is. We don't really know what's in their mind at that last moment, but it's typically after an event, you know. So we know how many have killed themselves after they've received word that they're going to get divorced, or they've been served divorce paper, or they've been separated. We know, you know, which ones had financial problems, which ones were under investigation, which one had a drinking problem. So all of these problems in the real world, you would go out and get help and get better and go back to work. When it's in law enforcement, you don't get to always go back to work. You can't always go out and get help. So these are real-life events that are triggers that you are not allowed, so to speak, to get help with, that will precipitate the suicide. And that's a real problem. And again, it goes back to the stigma. It's a cultural thing, not just in law enforcement. It's you know, with the general population. And it definitely lies within the leadership.
One of the things that that I think we need to touch on, you're aware that I'm about to launch the Wounded Blue, the support and assistance organization for injured and disabled police officers. And one of the major factors in my decision to create this organization is because of the strong correlation between getting injured or disabled in the line of duty and then the nexus to suicide. Mm-hmm. There are so many times, I know that the statistic varies, but an officer who is injured or disabled in the line of duty is much more likely to choose suicide down the road. Have you addressed that issue at all?
So we have definitely seen that. Again, we do record quite a few data points, so we know who was IOD when they killed themselves. We know which ones had prior attempts. We know, so there's definitely a correlation to some of them, absolutely. There's also a correlation to retirement. We just had an officer who killed himself. He was 2 months away from retirement. Why are these officers killing themselves right before retirement? And it goes to that whole loss of identity, not knowing what to do with their life. And if you're injured, obviously the same thing happens. You lose your identity, you lose your source of income, and we all know that an officer who is injured on duty doesn't necessarily get the financial support that they need. And in some cases, the city will fight them tooth and nail and tell them that their injury didn't happen on the job or doesn't count and they shouldn't get any benefits. So it's a really strange thing.
You know what,
all these
what
things
really
that I've seen and learned.
Karen, unfortunately, what this really comes down to, if you strip away everything else, it is how are organizations and communities, the city governments and town governments themselves, almost on a national level, are treating their law enforcement officers not as assets, but as almost as detriments instead of embracing the difficulties of their jobs and the particular changes that take place throughout the years. They are very quick to toss officers away and treat them as a liability.
I agree. And it's funny because, you know, I've always worked in the private sector, so I know what companies do for people in the private sector and how they help them get back on their feet and how they let them back at work and how they give them the time off they need to heal from whatever it is. They don't do that in law enforcement. And, you know, and I said this last week, we hold them to a higher standard, but we don't help them to a higher standard. So we expect them to be all this and more, but once they fall off that pedestal, we don't feel like we can put them back up because somehow they become damaged or they'll become a liability to the department, to the community, and there's going to be a lawsuit coming. God forbid they do something on the job that's, you know, the public deems irrational. They'll go back and say, well, wasn't he depressed last year, you know? So that's part of the problem, too, is this expectation that they are supposed to be something more than the average human being, you know? So that's a big part of it too.
I love that phrase that you just said. In fact, I was writing it down as you were talking. We hold them to a higher standard, but we don't help them to a higher standard. That is that is a very poignant statement, and one that I think is really an important thought when you're talking about the plight of the American law enforcement officer. So what is in the future for the organization?
So in the future, we do have a wellness app coming out soon. We'll be announcing that after the first of the year. We also have the grief camps coming out for the children of the officers. We have the Police Week camp, Police Week dinner, as I mentioned. And we're just going to keep plugging it along with, as you know, people ask us to speak. We'll be at the Western States Hostage Negotiators Conference. And then I think we're going to be somewhere every month next year, which is really great because the message is getting out there and people want to hear it and they want to understand it. So that's really important. And we're just going to continue to help the families.
Your organization is still very, very new. When did you begin this venture?
So we actually became incorporated and got our 501c in 2017 in May. So we are super new. Yes. But we've created quite a nice footprint for ourselves because of the fact that we are doing something that no one else has dared to do. Because we've, you know, when we said we were going to put up this website with the dates and a suicide counter, people said, no, you can't do that. And I said, oh, okay, well, we're going to. Sorry, you know, because why can't I, you know? And somebody said, oh, it's so depressing. Really? Is it any more depressing than going to Officer Down Memorial page? Is it any more depressing than going to those other pages? Because I don't think it is. And the stories are definitely harder to hear. It's definitely, you know, I think it's this human, this natural of aversion we have to death, and suicide is something that people just can't wrap their heads around. So I think that that just makes it even harder. So just bringing this forward and just taking it on and not shying away for the hard topics, because we let the families tell the stories. We write their stories. We have them on video telling their stories, and that's something that no one has ever done before. So we are saying the word suicide. We are saying they killed themselves. We are saying, hey, don't forget them. And it resonates with a lot of people because they've known somebody who's killed themselves, or they've thought of it before. I was at a thing on Friday, and typically by the time we're done talking, people are crying, and it's a tough room to be in. And sure. One of the officers, his lower lip was trembling, and he came to me later, and he said, and this is a guy who works in human trafficking, and, you know, so you would expect that me speaking about suicide isn't really going to affect him, but he was really affected by it. And he said, you know, I've lost some friends in law enforcement to suicide, so I had a really hard time. I'm listening to you. So it's a good and a bad thing, because what I keep saying is the only way I believe that we're going to make a change is to really grab people's hearts and make them feel what these families feel and make them become emotionally attached to the topic. And that's what we try to do.
I really admire what you're doing. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you, because you're sincerely making a difference in the lives of the law enforcement community. Now, how can people find you and help?
They can just go to our website, bluehelp.org. That's where we are, www.bluehelp.org.
Now, besides that, what you're doing with this organization, you've also written a couple books. Let's talk about them for just a moment.
Yeah, so I guess this all started after Ferguson, Missouri, the shooting, Darren Wilson. I got a little frustrated with the media at the time, so I decided to write the book. You know, I mean, who didn't, right? Hearts Beneath the Badge. And it was just a compilation of stories of officers around the country who did good deeds. And I don't keep the proceeds of any of the books. They're all donated to law enforcement charities because they're not my stories. These officers graciously gave me their stories and told me their stories and let me put them in a book. And after that, a second book was born, where it's called The Price They Pay. And what it is it's another compilation of stories, but it's the compilation of the deepest, darkest stories of the officer who got shot 5 times point blank in the chest and survived, the cumulative trauma, the one that watched a child burn alive. And then peppered in between those chapters is some intellectual support for it, written by one of our co-founders, Jeff McGill. So it's a really cool book. It gives your mind something to think about while you're reading these emotional stories, and how it's proven, in fact, that these stories and these officers' lives are going to traumatize them. So that was the second book, and then that book kind of led to this whole Blue Help and suicide prevention. It wasn't planned. It just kind of ended up that way, you know? It was one of those things that just let us down a path.
Of your life has taken you to some really interesting areas, and the role that you're playing now is vitally important, and I can tell that, you know, the fact is that you are highly dedicated, you're motivated by the right reasons, and you are truly making a difference. So
thank
I want to, you know, personally thank you for what you're doing. Once again, the website?
www.bluehelp.org.
I recommend for my listeners to check out that website to assist financially. It's a great cause, and there's a lot in the future from this organization that's going to assist the families of those men and women who are subjected to the incredible stresses of law enforcement. Thanks for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Karen Solomon of Blue Help.
Thank you.
I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People.
End of watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have two names to read. The first is Deputy United States Marshal Chase White. Deputy U.S. Marshal Chase White was shot and killed at 5:30 p.m. while attempting to serve a warrant at a home on 15th Avenue near Jacinto Street in Tucson, Arizona. He and other officers were attempting to arrest the man who had been charged with stalking a law enforcement officer. The man opened fire, killing Deputy Marshal White before barricading himself in his home. He surrendered approximately 1 hour later. Deputy Marshal White was a member of the United States Air Force Reserve and has served the United States Marshal's Office for 3 years. He is survived by his wife and 4 children. Deputy U.S. Marshal Chase White, United States Department of Justice, Marshal Service. End of watch, Thursday, November 29th, 2018. The second is Trooper Robert E. Nagel of the New Jersey State Police. Trooper Robert Nagel died as the result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Trooper Nagel was a New Jersey Air National Guard veteran. He had served with the New Jersey State Police and the former New Jersey Marine Police for a total of 34 years. He is survived by his wife, children, and grandchildren. Trooper Robert E. Nagel, New Jersey State Police. End of watch, Monday, November 26th, 2018. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for tuning in this week to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. So once again, thank you guys for tuning in to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.